Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is the 21st podcast I've recorded. I'm recording it in October of 2008. And the title of this one is, When Stock Prices Fall, Where Does the Money Go? I'm recording this on Friday, October 10th. My usual practice is just to give the month in which I record a podcast, but it's been hard to keep up lately. The last couple of weeks, stock prices have been falling so fast that any commentary on stocks has to include the actual day of the recording because it could be different in a couple of days. But as of last night, the stock price, the Dow was at, I believe, around 8,600, somewhere around there. So we've had a big drop in stock prices, and by the time you listen to this, that may have reversed. We may have gone up and made up some of that ground, or of course, we may have gone even lower. I just don't know. But I read in a commentary today that the loss in stock market value that we've experienced in the last 12 months is now at $8 trillion. So middle-class Americans have lost $8 trillion of net worth. And that's obviously a very big deal, and that's the cause of the economic problems we're facing today. When you take $8 trillion out of the economy, you're going to have negative effects. People can't buy things. When people can't buy things, businesses fail. When businesses fail, workers lose their job. When workers lose their jobs, even more people can't buy things. So it's a negative cycle that just grows stronger and stronger. And of course, we call that a recession. And in the worst case, in the 1920s, when we had the worst of those negative cycles, we called it a Great Depression. And there are people today comparing what we are going through today to the Great Depression. I think that's premature. I think it's unfortunate. It strikes me as excessively pessimistic. I believe that we have been excessively optimistic for some time now in pretending that the stock market wealth that we were told we had was real. And so there was an excessive optimism about that that I have argued against for years now. I have argued that we need to be more realistic in our assessments of what the stock market can do and what the stock market cannot do. But swinging to the opposite extreme is just as bad. It doesn't help anyone for us now to talk as if we are in the Great Depression. We are not today in the Great Depression. If we start talking that way, frankly, we can cause a Great Depression. Depressions are not strictly economic events. There's usually an economic cause for them, but they're partially emotional events. People get so down that they give up, and giving up means they become non-productive, and the lack of productivity causes a depression. I always talk about valuations for stocks. We were, for many years now, we've been at extreme, absurd valuation levels. That dates back to the mid-1990s. So for, 10, 13 years, we've been at absurd valuation levels, absurd levels of optimism expressed in the stock market price. Now we're back down at a reasonable stock market price. But yes, it's true. If we now lose all perspective and go down to price levels as absurd on the low end as we recently were at on the high end, we could trigger a depression. Why do that? I would like to see responsible people step forward. I don't mean to deny the problems. Responsible people acknowledge the problems and point them out. That's the job. But responsible people don't engage in needless pessimism and scaremongering, which just makes things worse. So that's where I'm coming from. Yes, it's a serious problem. Yes, we need to discuss it soberly. But we also need to keep our wits about us. We need to understand that the drop in stock market prices was absolutely required. There's nothing strange about it. There's nothing shocking about it. What's shocking, of course, is that many people didn't know it was coming because the quote-unquote experts did not tell them. They just pretended that this was that these stock market values were real and that they could last forever. And that was never a viable possibility. There was never any truth to that idea. So anyway, the point of this podcast is to address a question that always comes up when we have a sudden drop in stock prices. A lot of what I learn about investing, I learned from investing discussion boards, because that's where you're not talking about theory. There's a lot of theories out there, and there's a place in the world for theory. I engage in theory myself, theorizing myself. But what counts in my book is what happens in the real world. What happens when real live middle class investors take the theories and try to apply them to their own financial circumstances, developing their own investing strategies. And the best place to learn about how people apply the theories is on discussion boards. There you can see in real time how people respond to the ups and downs of the market. And so I love this question. Whenever there is a big drop in stock prices, there will be a person who will come to a discussion board and they almost always apologize. They almost always say, I'm sorry to ask this question. I know it's dumb. I know I should understand this, but I don't. And then they ask the question, when stock prices fall, where does the money go? And boy, is that not a dumb question. That is the greatest question you can ask. And that's why I'm devoting this entire podcast to it. If you understand the answer to that question in a complete, in-depth sense, you understand the realities of stock investing. If you really understand the answer to that question, and the reality is, I am sorry to report, very few understand the answer to that question. And I don't just mean very few middle-class investors understand the answer to that question. Very few investing experts understand the answer to that question. Now, if you pose it to them, I always take John Bogle as my example, and I don't mean to pick on John Bogle. He offers much wonderful investing advice. He has made some mistakes. He offers some bad investing advice as well. But I use Bogle because he's the quintessential example of the person who gives advice to middle-class investors. And if you ask John Bogle, when stock prices fall, where does the money go? I am confident he would offer an answer that made sense and that was generally correct. I'm absolutely confident of that, based on what I know from his writings. Now, but it would not be an answer that really got to the heart of it. And that's hard. It's hard for me to explain to you why that is. The reason it is that human beings, the phrase I always use, I say human beings are not computers on legs. The problems we are having with stocks today are not intellectual problems. It's not that we don't understand in an intellectual sense how stock investing works. We understand that perfectly well. The problem is that we do not understand it in an emotional sense. So what happens is somebody like John Bogle has read all the books. He has lots of experience, and he will give you an answer based on what the books say. But emotionally, there's a block that stops him from fully understanding the implications of his answer. And that block is the problem that we're dealing with today. When we knock down that block, not just for Bogle, obviously, for all of us contribute to this, then there's a wonderful world on the other side of things to learn about how stock investing really works. Things that can make stock investing less risky, things that can help us obtain higher returns, things that can help reduce our anxiety about stock investing, and a lot of people are feeling anxiety today. So let me take a stab at answering this question. The question that gets asked when someone reads in the paper that in the past year, middle-class investors have lost $8 trillion of wealth. The question that people ask is, where did that money go? If $8 trillion is gone, it must have gone somewhere, right? Where did it go? Where is it? What happened to it? Now, the answer is, just, you know, in one syllable, it went poof. It's gone. It disappeared. Now, how can that happen? How can $8 trillion just disappear? In order to understand that, you have to understand the other side of the equation. The reason why $8 trillion can just disappear is that the $8 trillion never really existed in the first place. It just sort of started showing up on the books. It started showing up in the newspaper reports about the price level, and it started showing up on the bottom line of the last page of your portfolio statement. But there was never any economic reality to it. It was always a fiction. So something that comes into existence as a fiction can also go out of existence when the fiction expires. Okay? Now, I don't mean to say, please don't, people can hear these things and go too far with it and develop misunderstandings. I am not saying that all stock investing is a fiction. Stock investing is a combination of two very, very different things. It's a combination of economic realities, and the economic realities are not a fiction, and to the extent your stock shares represent real wealth, they are not going to go poof. The value you put in stocks is not going to disappear. There is a reality to stock investing, but that's only 50% of the story. There is also a fictional element to stock investing. I often refer to it as cotton candy returns. There are times when the value of your stock shares are fictional. They're not real. And that fictional portion of your net worth, if you call it that, can just disappear in a day or a week or a month. And that's what we've seen happening in recent days. So I'll try to go through an example that might help you understand where the $8 trillion went. Say that you have a company. Say that, you know, just to pick any company, you know, out of the book. Say it's Apple Computer. And I'm just, all of these numbers are made up. But just say that there were 1 million shares of Apple Computer for sale. And say that Apple Computer were valued at $20 per share. So the total value of all shares of Apple Computer is $20 million. The owners of Apple Computer have an investment in Apple Computer of $20 million. Now, say that there's one fellow who wakes up one day and the sun is shining and he's young at heart and he's in love and he just says, you know what? Apple Computer's not worth $20. I feel really good today. I feel really optimistic about the future of Apple Computer. I'm going to go out and buy a share of Apple Computer, and I'm going to offer $21. I am confident that it's worth $21. And he does that. So he goes to his broker and he says, "I'd like to buy one share of Apple Computer, and I'm offering $21." And of course, someone agrees. And he obtains the share of Apple Computer for $21. Now, that individual, how much has he spent? He has spent a total of $21. How much did the net worth of Apple Computer increase because of his spending of $21? The net worth of Apple Computer, according to the newspaper reports of what that stock is worth, has gone up by $1 million. The way the newspaper determines what a stock is worth is they take the last sale, and that's the price of that stock. So Apple Computer is now valued at $21. And there's still 1 million shares out there, so you multiply 21 times a million and you come to the number 21 million. So this individual, by spending $21, has increased the net worth of Apple shareholders by $1 million. And that's a very simplified example, but it gets the concept across. That's how stock prices are determined. And this goes on every day with, you know, millions of transactions. And it just repeats itself over and over and over again. People come in, they bid too much for the price of a stock, more than the stock is worth. And they benefit millions of people who own that stock. And all of those people now, when they get their portfolio statement in the mail, it says, hey, you're richer. And all those people start to feel good. And it's all a fiction. Now, I mentioned before, it's not always a fiction. Every one of these stocks has a real value to it. So if Apple Computer is, let's just say that Apple Computer is genuinely worth $20. It's not worth 21, but it's genuinely worth 20. Well then, when the net worth is 21 million, it's not right to say that that 21 million is totally a fictional number. It's fictional to the extent of 1 million, and it's real to the extent of 20 million. So, in order to invest successfully for the long term, what the individual investor needs to know is, when I buy stocks, how much am I buying that's real, that has economic substance, that's going to last me for the long term, and how much is just this cotton candy that just gets blown away in the wind, that has no lasting value? Now, if you buy individual stocks, like the followers of Warren Buffett do, they believe in something called value investing. And what Warren Buffett does and what he teaches others to do is they go in to the books of the companies they're buying and they study them. So they find out, they come to a conclusion, is Apple worth $20 or is Apple worth $19 or is Apple worth, you know, $20? They study these questions. That's how they try to invest effectively. We now live in an era that was really initiated by Bogle. The indexing revolution has taken hold. Most middle-class investors today do not research the companies they buy. Most middle-class investors are buying index funds or mutual funds. They're not studying the individual companies. So they don't know. They don't know what the things are worth. But this is a terrible, terrible, terrible mistake. I think it's a perfectly good idea to index. I think that's a wonderful idea because most of us just don't have the time and inclination to study all these companies to get their annual reports and, you know, to study their balance sheets and all this sort of thing. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of time. So buying a broad index fund solves the problem. You don't have to study the companies. There are going to be some companies that do well and some companies that do poorly. And in general, you're going to earn returns consistent with the returns of the market as a whole. So that's a wonderful idea. And that's an idea that Bogle has done more than any other person out there to popularize that idea. And you know, he should be given all the credit in the world for it. But Bogle made a terrible, terrible, terrible mistake when he adopted what's called the passive investing model. The passive investing model says that you don't need to value, you don't need to assign a value to these index funds you buy. And that's a recipe for disaster. You must assign a value to the index fund you buy before you put money on the table. So the way that's done, it's not all that complicated. The way it's done is you need a valuation metric that works. The one that I use for all the articles at the website is PE10. That's the price of the index over the average of the last 10 years of earnings. Using that tool, using the PE10 tool, you can assign a value to the index fund you're buying. And then you always know how well your investment is going to perform over the long term. So for example, the fair value PE10 number is 14. If you buy a broad index when the PE10 value is 14, you know that you've obtained a very strong long-term value proposition. Does this mean you can't see a drop in stock prices? No, it does not mean that at all. But what it means is if you do see a drop, you're going to see a recovery in not that long a time. The drop is not going to be permanent. The drop is not anything to become unduly concerned about. On the other hand, stocks have recently been selling. In recent years, they've been selling it at PE10 values of 25, 30, even in excess of 30. If you buy an index when it's selling at a PE10 value of 25, can you say, oh, well, when there's a big price drop like we've just seen, am I going to get my money back? No. There's no reassurance whatsoever that you're going to get your money back. If you purchase stocks at a time when the PE10 value was 25, the odds are you are not going to get your money back. The losses are permanent because the money was never there. It was fictional. Every time the PE10 value goes above 14, you are dealing with cotton candy returns. You are dealing with cotton candy money, money that is not real, money that just goes poof when something happens in the economy. Now, there's no way that anyone can tell you in advance what's going to cause the poof phenomenon to take place. None of us know that there's going to be a bank bailout crisis or whatever it's going to be. What we can tell you is it's going to be something. If you buy stocks at a PE10 value of 25, you're going to suffer big financial losses in days to come. If stocks perform in the future anything at all as they've always performed in the past. On the other hand, if you buy stocks at a PE10 value of 14, which is fair value, or 16, which is the PE10 value that applies today, the odds are strong that you are going to get a strong long-term value proposition out of that. So do you see how valuable it is to ask this so-called dumb question? When stock prices fall, where does the money go? Usually the answer is the money goes poof, because usually when prices fall hard, what's happened is stocks were overvalued to begin with. They're simply returning to fair value, and trillions of dollars are just being erased. Just as they were artificially created, they're now being artificially eliminated. Now, this takes you to the point you need to understand to invest going forward from today. What if we see another huge price increase? What if we see a price decrease? What if we see another price drop, another 50% loss? Has that money gone poof? The answer is no. If we see a 50% price drop from today's values, we will be at a PE10 level not of 16, but of 8. The drop from 16 to 8 is not a loss of cotton candy. It's a loss of real economic substance. You see, the fair value is 14. So when you go below 14, the price of stocks is artificially low, as much as it was artificially high at earlier times. Well, when it's artificially low, just as when the price is artificially high, you can, with confidence, look forward to a big price drop. When the price is artificially low, you can, with confidence, look forward to a big price increase. So if you were to buy stocks today and then see a 50% price drop over, let's say, the next 4 years, these things don't always happen overnight. It could take 3 years or 4 years or 5 years. Prices could grind lower and lower and lower and lower. It doesn't matter if you are emotionally prepared to be a long-term investor, because even if the price goes to 8, it's going to go back again to 14. You're going to get your money back in not that long a time. You know, within a year or 5 years, but certainly within 10 years, almost certainly within 10 years. So the probabilities are on your side when you buy stocks at fair value or something close to fair value. But the odds are very much against you when you buy stocks at the absurdly inflated prices at which they've been selling for the past 10 years. Now, it's critical to understand this. And the reason is, you know, what I was getting at the beginning of this podcast, I was talking about, you know, these people are laying out these scenarios now. We're headed into a depression. Well, no one can say we're absolutely not. I don't have a crystal ball. I can't say what's going to happen. But I do not see any economic requirement that we head into a depression. As long as people understand why they've lost $8 trillion of wealth, there's nothing to be depressed about. There's nothing to panic about. It's just a natural development in the markets that we all should have seen coming. Now, the reason why people are panicking is that 90% of the population didn't see it coming. 90% of the population listens to these experts when they put out this passive investing gibberish. And they say, oh, valuations don't matter. You don't need to worry about the price. Always buy stocks, stocks for the long run. All this gibberish, which is all just pure nonsense. Valuations always matter. Stocks are often a wonderful value proposition, but sometimes not. Sometimes they're a terrible value proposition, as they have been for the past 10 years. In order to know, you just have to look at the price tag. You have to say, how much am I paying for these stocks? Am I getting a good value proposition or am I getting a poor value proposition? If only people knew this, then price drops of the type we have seen in recent weeks would not cause panic. We would just take them in course and we would recover. And it's becoming ever more urgent that we do this, because if we don't tell people the realities, people are never going to develop confidence about their stock investments. And if people don't develop confidence, these losses are indeed going to cause panic, and they could ultimately cause a depression. So we're not risking a depression for economic reasons. As far as I can see, we're risking a depression for emotional reasons. And all of this negative emotion comes from the deceptions that are rooted in the passive investing model of understanding how stock investing works. This is the enemy. Passive investing is the enemy of the middle class investor. So do spend some time thinking about this question. When stock prices fall, where does the money go? And don't just be satisfied with a simple sort of cursory answer to the question. Think through the implications. If $8 trillion can go poof in the course of a year, doesn't that tell you something about what stock investing is really about? It's not just about an intellectual understanding. It's not just about charts and tables and graphs and all this sort of thing. That's part of what it's about. That's half of what it's about. It's also about emotion. And if you don't understand how much emotion is in the price of stocks, you can't make an informed decision whether to buy stocks or not. You simply cannot do it. One of the things that I press for is if you look at articles at my website, you'll see. I don't know if I can recall the title. There's an article at my website at the Band at Motley Fool section called Investing Discussion Boards Ban Honest Posting on Valuations. And I think that's probably the most important article I have ever posted at the website. It's 101 snippets of comments that different investors made, people who participated in investing discussion boards, who expressed the desire that honest posting on valuations be permitted. Now, when I make a statement like that, even the headline, you know, the title of that article, I almost feel like you know, it's almost like crazy talk. The title of the articles is Investing Discussion Boards Ban Honest Posting on Valuations. Could anything be more insane? Valuations are 50% at least of the investing project. I think they may be 70%. That's my personal opinion. But at a minimum, 50%, and these boards are banning honest posting on a question that affects 50% of the underlying topic? Could anything be more crazy? Nothing could be more crazy than that. But yet, that's what happened. And it's all detailed in that article. So if you have any doubts about it, please read the article. Go to the website, read the article. What we need in the investing world is we need more people studying these questions. We need people publishing articles like that one. We need people going to discussion boards, seeing how people react to investing, to the discussion of various investing questions, and then commenting on the emotion that's present in the comments people make. Because that's the test of whether a strategy can work or not. You see, the test is not to go to MIT and study equations, you know, for 4 years and, you know, get a master's in mathematics. That won't make you a good investor. And so many middle class investors are intimidated by that. They listen to these experts, and the experts have all these initials after their name. You know, they went here and they went there, and they know so much. And they don't dare hardly to ask a question. But the experts do know things. We should respect them for that, and we should be grateful that they're willing to share what they know. But we need to understand that getting a degree from MIT doesn't mean that you understand the emotional side of investing. It's a totally different animal. It's just a totally different animal. And I would say today, if you look at the literature on investing, 90% of it deals with the numbers stuff. 10%. There's every now and then you'll see an article put forward by somebody who believes in the behavioral finance school, where they talk about the emotional side. But that's at minimum 50% of the project, and I think 70%. So we have almost nothing. We keep beating to death the numbers side of the story, and we keep ignoring the side that we are uncomfortable with. The reason why we ignore it is the types of people who are good with numbers, and this is John Bogle, and this is Bill Bernstein, and this is Scott Burns, Jonathan Clements, all the people that I talk about in my podcast. These are all numbers guys. They're well-intentioned. They're trying to help. But you start talking about, I brought up how the historical data shows that the old school safe withdrawal rate studies get the number wrong, and the response of the authors of the study was to, you know, make a death threat that anyone who talks about what the historical data says, he's going to go to his house and kill him. And Jonathan Clements, you know, I get no reaction. I wrote that to Jonathan Clements. I was talking about FireCalc, you know, which is this old school safe withdrawal rate calculator, and Clements had linked to it, and I said, Jonathan, you know, I'm sure I said something that I appreciate his column, you know, that he does a lot of good work for the people that this time he was working at the Wall Street Journal. He's no longer employed there, but he had a great column at the Wall Street Journal for many years. And I say, Jonathan, FireCalc, you know, we've examined it in the retire early community, and we found that the numbers are wildly wrong. And the guy, you know, the author of the calculator banned on its discussion because he didn't have any answers to why he hadn't corrected his calculator, why he hadn't fixed it after he learned about the errors in it. And Jonathan was, you know, very gracious, and he responded. He said, oh, you know, your approach of looking at safe withdrawal rates is interesting, and the old school studies are definitely not the last word, and, you know, all that is good. But no response to the question about the death threats, you see? And, you know, I almost feel like I'm talking a different language. I'm talking about death threats, and they're talking about mathematical calculations. And both things matter, but you've got to integrate it. You've got to say, you know, if you're Jonathan Clements and you're writing a column about investing, you've got to look at this and say, whoa, people are making death threats. Something's gone wrong in Investo world. What's causing this? And of course, what's causing it is that the people who develop those calculators, they develop them out of a belief in the passive investing model. That's why the calculators are so messed up. They leave out the valuation component of the story. And you can't get the numbers right. If it's 50% of investing and you ignore it, you're obviously not going to get the numbers right. So all the numbers are wrong. And when you point that out, you say, look, here's what the historical data says. It doesn't agree. And they freak out. They don't know where to turn. So I don't know. My point here is I don't want to go on that riff. I did four podcasts on passive investing is the most emotional investing approach of all. So if you want to hear more of that riff, listen to those four podcasts. But the point here is, if you're asking the question, when stock prices fall, where does the money go? You're on the threshold of a breakthrough. If you will take that question seriously and insist on a serious answer to it, and if you will explore the implications in depth, you're going to have a light switch. You're going to have a light switch. And all of a sudden, you're going to say, wait a minute, I get it now. Now I understand why we lost $8 trillion. We never had the $8 trillion in the first place. We were just playing a mind game. We were pretending to have $8 trillion. You see, this is where the death threats come from. And all the other, you know, all the death threats is just symbolic of all the abusive posting that we see. Whenever the historical data is mentioned on any of these discussion boards where there's a group of people who believe in passive investing. Passive investing and historical data, it's you know, it's like oil and water. Citing what the historical data says to a strong believer in passive investing is like holding up a crucifix to a vampire. That's the way it is. They can't stand it because the historical data spells it all out. It takes the emotional side of investing and reduces that to numbers. That's what PE10 really is. I almost hesitate at times to talk about PE10 because I feel like I'm playing the passive investing game. I'm dealing with these intellectual constructs and numbers and tables. But the reason why I always come back to PE10 is the power of it is to reveal how emotional the market is. That's what PE10 is telling you. When the PE10 level is 14, what the number's telling you is you've got a rational price. If stocks are generally a good value proposition, then they're a good value proposition now. But when the PE10 level is 25, it's telling you you've got crazy levels of emotion here. Maybe you want to pull back a little bit if you don't want to participate in that. If you don't want to sign your retirement money off on a crazy gamble. That's what the PE10 value is really telling you. It's telling you how much of the money that you're putting into stocks is going to be buying an asset of economic value and how much of it is going to be buying cotton candy emotionalism that can just blow away and in a few months it's just all gone. And what I am trying to do is what I want to do is see a switch from passive investing to rational investing where the experts would be telling people in advance when they buy stocks at 25, we would let people know. We'd say, hey, buy stocks if you want, but please understand this money's going to blow away in the wind. It's not real. And then people would not be shocked when the money blew away. They'd say, oh, yeah, I knew that was coming. Or I knew it was likely coming. I knew that the odds were against me. I took a chance. It was a gamble. You know, if you buy stocks when they're at a P10 level of 25, it's like gambling. Sometimes you buy a lottery ticket, it pays off. But the odds are stacked against you. That's really the point. When you buy at high prices, the odds are against you. And when you buy at good prices, the odds are for you. And you need to know the difference. And if passive investing is the investing model that says, ignore that, pay no attention to the odds, pay no attention to the probabilities, just go with that emotion that says, hey, I'm going to get rich quick. I'm going to be the one where it's all going to be different. Isn't that what gamblers say? You tell a gambler, hey, the odds are against you. And he says, I don't know. I've got a feeling. I'm feeling lucky. I'm going to be different. You know, yeah, maybe they'll acknowledge that others lose their money when they gamble it, but they'll say, I'm going to be different. And that's what passive investors do when they say there's no need to lower your stock allocation when prices are high. They're saying, maybe the historical data says what it says, but hey, I got a feeling here. But that's where panic comes from, because of course what happens is sometimes those feelings come through. There are a few passive investors that make a lot of money, to be sure. But there aren't going to be many. Most are going to lose. Most are going to lose large amounts of their accumulated wealth of a lifetime. And when they lose it, they're going to panic. And that's what we're living through today. So I'm trying to give you the information you need to be prepped so that these feelings of panic don't cause you to make crazy decisions that will cause you to lose money. And I hope that starting today, you'll start exploring more rational approaches to investing. You'll start paying attention to valuations. And if you do that, the stock market offers a great deal. It offers a great deal. People are always talking about how risky stocks are. But if you lower your stock allocation at times of extreme prices, stocks are just not that risky. It's not really a correct statement to say that stocks are risky, in my opinion. There's always some risk, because even today, when prices are, as of today, and this may change by the time you hear this podcast, but as of Friday, October 10th, prices are reasonable. We still might see a 50% price drop, but it is highly unlikely that 50% price drop will remain in place for more than 5 or 6 years. So if you're investing for the long term, yes, you may take a hit, and obviously you're going to feel anxiety if you lose 50% of your money. But if you understand going in that that's a possibility, then I believe you can hold. And if you hold to the other side, you're going to end up, the most likely 10-year return on stocks at today's prices is 5% real, annualized. That means every year for those 10 years, you'd be earning a 5% plus inflation. That's a very strong value proposition compared to what you can get in other asset classes today. So, that's the bright side. That's the bright side to this price crash. And I wish that the media was getting that out to people. I wish that all stock experts, so-called experts, were telling people that. Because if you're hearing the bad news that prices fell, you need to hear a little good news to get balance so that we don't get into a state of panic and that we don't end up in a depression. And the good news is, for the first time in 10 years, stocks offer a strong long-term value proposition. So I wish that the news they would deliver is, yes, prices have fallen dramatically, but we now have an asset class we can invest in and earn a strong long-term return. There's a two-part message there, and it's always a two-part message. When prices are going up, it's just the opposite. In those cases, the good news is prices have gone up. If you own stocks, your nominal net worth is at least higher. But the bad side is you've locked in a price drop for the future. So that's a mixed message. It's rational investing is emotionally balanced investing. Rational investing is emotionally balanced investing. Every increase in valuations has a good and a bad side. Every drop in valuations has a good and a bad side. If, say that you were, the important point here is that until you start looking at the price of the stocks you buy, at the PE10 value, until you do that, you cannot make informed decisions, period. Say that you're the manager of a baseball team, and I tell you, you've got a fast runner on first base, no outs. Do you steal, or do you not steal? There's no way to answer that question unless you know the circumstances in which that runner got on first base. If you're ahead by 5 runs, you might well not steal. You might say, I don't need to steal. Or if you're say you're behind by 5 runs, that's a better example. Say it's the bottom of the 9th inning, and you're 5 runs back. To steal would be madness, because you've only got 3 outs and you've got to get 5 runs. To risk an out is crazy. Getting to second base isn't going to help you that much. It takes out the possibility of the double play. That's all. It's a crazy idea to steal in those circumstances. But say you're down by 1 run, or say the game is tied, then a steal is a good strategy if the odds are that you can accomplish it successfully. Then getting to second base is a big deal, because now you've got 3 batters coming up, and if one of them gets a single, you score a run. You score the tying run or the winning run. So the circumstances determine your strategy. Well, it works the same way with investing. If you know that the long-term value proposition is good, that That's a factor that determines what your stock allocation should be. If you know the long-term value proposition is poor, that's a factor that determines what your stock allocation can be. So passive investors are blind investors. Passive investors are willfully, deliberately blinding themselves to the realities of stock investing. As you know, it sounds impossible. What I'm telling you sounds so crazy that it seems impossible, but it is reality. This is the way most experts tell us to invest today. They tell us to invest blind. The most important thing we do as investors is to set our stock allocation. And they're telling us to do that blindly, not to educate ourselves, not to inform ourselves. And the reason, of course, is there is no intellectual justification for doing such a thing. It's pure madness. The reason for doing it, the motivation, let's call it, the motivation is emotional. That when stock prices are high, we all want to believe that that money is real. We have a deep desire to believe that that money, that dollar amount we see at the bottom line of the last page of our portfolio statement is real. That we really have that much money. And we don't. And we have an emotional resistance to hearing the realities. I think it's the job of investing analysts to break through that resistance and to help us to understand the realities. And so my job with all the work I do in this field is to help you break through that resistance. Another example of it is say that you have to give a speech. You know, I've had this experience. I used to give speeches at the job I had, the corporate job I had. And, you know, giving speeches makes people nervous. And I would sometimes be nervous. And I'd know the speech is coming up on Monday. And, you know, a week before, you start getting a little tiny bit nervous. And by Thursday night, Friday night, you know, you're feeling nervous. And so sometimes I'd say, well, I should practice, you know, go down in the basement and just go through the speech. And, you know, even what would happen is that would make me nervous, especially when I started to talk, because what would usually happen is I'd go in the basement, I'd start to talk, and it would sound awful. What would come out of my mouth would be stilted and awkward, and, you know, I wouldn't know what transitions to make. It would just, you know, and every time I talk, I say, oh, you know, it's undermining my confidence. It's making me feel worse. Well, that's what happens with investing. That's what happens with looking at prices. When we're at a P10 level of, say, 25, which is, you know, we've been at the mid-20s, high 20s for 10 years now. When you're at 25 and somebody comes along and says, hey, look at valuations, look at prices. Don't ignore that. It's too important. You've got to look at it. The first feeling you get is this sick feeling in your stomach. I don't like that. It's telling me that I'm going to lose money. It's telling me, you know, I thought my net worth was $100,000. It's telling me it's only $50,000. I don't want to lose $50,000. What am I going to do? It makes you feel sick to the stomach. That's what I'm up against. That sick feeling in the stomach. Well, the reason why I keep badgering people and encouraging them to feel that sick feeling in the stomach is I know what happened when I practiced those speeches. Yes, it made me sick to the stomach when I practiced them the first time because they would sound awful. Sometimes I would record them, and that was worse. You know, I'd listen to the recording. I shut it off. I can't stand it anymore. I'm going to be a disaster. But what I learned was what I have to do in those circumstances is, you know, maybe write a little outline, you know, write some notes, and then go down and practice it again and keep doing it until I know the material well enough that it doesn't sound awkward, that I'm just talking to the people. And if I practiced it four or five times, by Sunday night, it was sounding pretty good. And now the magic kicks in. Now my practicing doesn't make me feel insecure. My practicing makes me feel hot. I hear myself. I record it. I play it back. I say, yeah, that works. I'm going to be all right. And now I'm not sweating. when they you know, when my turn comes to give the speech, now I'm thinking, yeah, this is fun. This is fun. Instead of worrying about how I sound, I'm looking at particular people out in the audience, and I see them shaking their heads. I can tell that they're hearing and they're getting it. And you know, all the energy is positive, and it's all headed my way. That's the way you want to feel about investing. And it is possible. I can tell you how. Go to the website. Listen to the other podcast. Work the calculators. Passive investing is negative emotional energy. It's living in denial. And that's always going to undermine you. It's always going to cut you off. That's why we get such hate and anger when we talk about the historical data on discussion boards today. Because we've got people who are trying to deny their common sense, and it does not work. But flip it. Flip over to the rational model, where you say, hey, I want to hear about the historical data. I want to hear from as many people as possible, all points of view. I want to learn. And yes, it'll give you a sick feeling in your stomach. If we're at a P10 level of 25, it's going to make you sick, because the first thing you're going to learn is you don't have 100,000. You really have 50,000, and that's a blow. But you'll get past it, and then the good stuff kicks in, because now that you recognize you've really got 50,000, you say, okay, I can pick it up. I can deal with that. I can, you know, I'll make it up. I'll make up that 50,000 by investing intelligently. And you'll start doing it, and then you'll start seeing that now the market actually behaves the way your model says it should behave. And it always does. You can go back to 1870 and you can go year by year, and you'll see the market always has been rational in an ultimate sense. It's wildly emotional in the short term at times, of course. Never has it been more emotional than it was in the 1990s. But it always returns to rationality. And so seeing that happen over and over and over again is going to make you more confident. Just like me practicing the speech over and over again made me feel more confident about my speaking abilities. So that's what I want you to do. So the point of this podcast is, if that question has ever crossed your mind, where did the $8 trillion go? When stock prices fall, where does the money go? Please don't think it's a stupid question. If you know the answer to that question, you know more about investing than John Bogle. True fact. True fact. He knows a lot. You know more. Because what he knows is all the intellectual stuff. You know enough of the intellectual stuff to get by, plus the emotional stuff, which Bogle is in the dark about to a large extent. He knows a little bit of the emotional stuff, but it's a real weakness for him. You can soar ahead of John Bogle. You can soar ahead of the MIT graduates. You can soar ahead of the people with the big words and the fancy graphics and the tables and the numbers. You can soar above them if you will think a little bit about this question. When stock prices fall, where does the money go? We are experiencing a stock crash. You know, perhaps it'll be over by the time you hear this podcast. I don't know. Perhaps it'll be worse. I don't know. But it's a learning opportunity. I refuse to take this as a doom and gloom event. It's sad that people have lost their money. The reality is the money never existed in the first place. It went poof because it was an artificial construct from the first day. It was never real. It was cotton candy. Let's accept that we made some mistakes. Let's move forward in an optimistic, determined to succeed way. This is a learning opportunity. It's not a stock crash. It's a learning opportunity, okay? We're not going to have a depression. I say so. Rob Bennett says no depression. You know, alert the media. All right. Check out the website, please. PassionSaving.com. Check out the other podcasts. Give me feedback. I'd love to hear what you think. Good luck with your investing strategies. You take care.